A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
I'm listening to the episode yesterday about, I sent you a challenge of creating what I call a latent value space of prompt to context, of taking a prompt history and mining it for contextual information to personalize AI. And we talked about how agentic AI is such an interesting system. And this is one space where you actually don't need to build anything new or do anything new. You just need to use the system. And as you accumulate prompts, you can run that extraction layer in order to put certain information into a vector database. We talked about one of the challenging aspect of that, where it gets really hard, is the fact that context is not a dynamic thing. And whenever two people in the real world hold a conversation, you're holding some context about that person in your brain. And if I were to, you know, guess how humans, if we kind of thought about them in robotic terms, you probably are doing some re-ranking about recency, when did I see this person last, to form the basis for your conversation. One thing that I think is really interesting about context and RAG is that as much as these are very new topics, they bring us back to the foundations of search. And search is one of those topics that I think gets little attention. And it's one of those things that we're so accustomed to typing something into Google and it working way before AI, that few people have any reason to think about how does a search engine deliver results. We often think about the actual information gathering layer. How does Google actually scoop up all that information that it can provide us with results? But there's an equally important layer, which is when Google is matching what it knows in its database against what I search for, how is it showing those results? And this is where, if you've built search and retrieval systems, including for RAG, you realize that it's way, way, way more complicated than you'd think. It's not just keyword-based searching. There's fuzzy searching, there's semantic searching, but that only gets you part of the way and can actually have unintended results if you tune it the wrong way. That if you have a semantic search that tries to make incorrect connections between ideas, you end up showing people irrelevant search results. We've all had that experience of using a search tool, or maybe more if you're trying out early stage software that isn't tuned well, and the search functionality, it just doesn't hit the spot in terms of finding what you know is in the catalog. And it's very hard to pinpoint why it went wrong, much less to diagnose why it went wrong. But one of the potential pitfalls, or failure modes, as Herman would call it, that I'd love to dive into in this episode is the re-ranking. Let's talk about re-ranking models, because they're fundamental in search in terms of tuning how the user actually gets shown that information. One tool that we use, that we have used on our website, I frequently will run, when I'm using Claude Code to send in episode prompts, I'll ask, wait, have we covered this before and what did we cover? And the search mechanism that I've built, or one of the early learnings, was if I just search by episode titles and descriptions, some of the early episodes were not titled very well or very accurately, and it'll miss a lot of matches. Then we began tuning that search lookup so that the full episode transcript, which is way, way more content, of course, that's what we're searching against. And that works much more effectively if I can say, hey, did we cover Edward Snowden before? And very easy to find every episode where Edward Snowden was mentioned. Now, if the query becomes to the AI tool, have we done a biography about Edward Snowden? I'm now layering on more reasoning for that search retrieval. We still are going to search for Edward Snowden, but if it's just a passing reference to WikiLeaks, the model should come back and say, we've mentioned him, but we haven't done a bio about him yet. So let's talk about re-ranking and tuning search results if we are setting up these kind of systems. What does re-ranking mean? What role does it play if you're configuring something like Algolia or using a vector pipeline to make sure that the search results that get fed from your RAG layer are actually optimal for the type of retrieval and information discovery you're looking to optimize.
Daniel sent us this one about re-ranking in search and retrieval systems. He's been building out the search layer on our own website, using full transcript search to figure out whether we've covered a topic before, and he ran into something that anyone who's worked with RAG pipelines knows intimately. You search for something, you know the information is in there, and the system still serves up results that don't quite hit. His question is, what's actually happening in that re-ranking step? What does re-ranking mean when you're configuring something like Algolia, or using a vector pipeline? And how do you tune it so the results that get fed into the RAG layer are optimal for the kind of retrieval you're trying to do?
This is one of those topics where the surface-level explanation is deceptively simple, but the moment you actually build something, you realize there are layers upon layers. Also, quick note, DeepSeek 5.4 Pro is writing our script today, so if anything sounds unusually coherent, that's why.
I was going to say, my leaf medicine regimen doesn't usually produce this level of clarity.
Your leaf medicine produces clarity of a very different kind. But let's get into re-ranking, because Daniel's framing here is actually quite precise. He's identified the exact point in the pipeline where a lot of search and RAG systems either deliver or fall apart. You've got your initial retrieval, which is the broad net, and then you've got re-ranking, which is the fine sieve. And most people who aren't building these systems never think about that second step at all.
When you type something into Google, you're experiencing the output of a multi-stage re-ranking pipeline that's been refined over decades. But the mental model most of us carry around is, I typed words, the search engine found pages with those words, and it showed them to me. That isn't even close to what's happening.
It's not close at all. And the reason Daniel's question is so well-timed is that re-ranking is where a lot of the interesting work is happening right now, especially as we move from traditional keyword search into hybrid systems that combine lexical and semantic retrieval. The initial retrieval stage, whether it's BM25, which is the classic term frequency-based algorithm, or dense vector search using embeddings, that first pass is designed to be fast and high, recall. It casts a wide net. You might retrieve 100 or 1,000 candidate documents. The re-ranker then takes that candidate set and reorders it, and ideally it's using a more computationally expensive but more precise model to do that ordering.
The initial retrieval is like, I'm going to grab everything that might be relevant, and I'm optimizing for not missing anything. The re-ranker is saying, now let me actually read these carefully and figure out which ones genuinely answer the question.
And the terminology here is important. The initial retrieval typically uses what's called a bi-encoder architecture. You encode your query into a vector, you encode each document into a vector, and you find the documents whose vectors are closest to the query vector. That's fast because you can pre-compute all the document vectors and just do a nearest neighbor search at query time. But the bi-encoder processes the query and the document independently. They never interact directly in the encoding step. The re-ranker, by contrast, typically uses a cross-encoder architecture where the query and the document are fed into the model together, and the model can attend to the relationships between them. That joint processing is what gives cross-encoders their precision advantage, but it's also what makes them too slow to run over your entire document collection.
You're trading off speed for precision, and the re-ranking step is where you decide that trade-off is worth it, because you're only running the expensive model on a small subset of candidates.
That's the core insight, and Pinecone has a really good breakdown of this. A bi-encoder, which again is your first stage retriever, might take something like 20 milliseconds per query for the initial nearest neighbor search over millions of vectors. A cross-encoder re-ranker applied to the top 100 candidates might add another 100 to 200 milliseconds. So your total latency is still well under a second, but the quality improvement can be dramatic. They've reported that adding a cross-encoder re-ranker to a RAG pipeline can improve retrieval precision by 20 to 30% on benchmark evaluations.
That's substantial, and it gets at something Daniel was hinting at in his prompt, which is that semantic search can actually hurt you if it's not tuned properly. The bi-encoder might surface documents that are semantically related, but factually irrelevant, and without a good re-ranker, those documents end up in your final results.
This is the classic failure mode. Let's say you search for, how do I treat a burn? A purely semantic search might retrieve documents about treating burns, but it might also retrieve documents about fire safety, about burnout syndrome, about calorie burning exercises, because the embedding space clusters all of these near each other. The bi-encoder doesn't know that you're asking about first aid. It just knows that the word burn appears in a certain semantic neighborhood. A cross-encoder re-ranker, seeing the full query and document together, can distinguish between this document is about medical treatment of thermal burns and this document is about how to burn calories. That distinction is trivial for a human reader, but it's not trivial for a vector similarity search.
This is exactly the problem Daniel described with early versions of the episode search on our website. Searching by episode titles and descriptions missed things because the metadata was thin or inaccurate. But when he switched to full transcript search, he got higher recall, more potential matches, but also more noise. The re-ranking step becomes the thing that separates the signal from that noise.
And there's an additional layer here that's specific to Daniel's use case. He's not just searching for episodes that mention a term, he's often asking a reasoning question. Have we done a biography of Edward Snowden? That requires the system to understand that a passing mention of Snowden in an episode about WikiLeaks is not the same thing as an episode dedicated to telling his life story. That's a distinction that operates at a level above simple keyword matching or even semantic similarity. You need the re-ranker to understand something about the structure and intent of the content.
Which brings us to the different types of re-ranking models and how you choose between them. Because it's not just one thing called re-ranking. There's a whole taxonomy.
There is, and I think it's useful to break it down into a few categories. The first and most traditional is feature-based re-ranking, sometimes called learning to rank. This is what Google used for many years, and it's still widely deployed. You extract features from each query document pair, things like BM25 score, page rank, click-through rate, document freshness, term proximity, whether the query terms appear in the title versus the body, and you train a model, often a gradient-boosted decision tree like XGBoost or LightGBM, to predict relevance based on those features. The model learns weights for each feature. It might learn that title match is worth 3 times as much as body match, or that recency matters a lot for news queries but not for historical queries.
The advantage there is that it's fast and interpretable. You can look at the feature weights and understand why a document was ranked where it was. The disadvantage, I assume, is that feature engineering is labor-intensive, and you might miss subtle semantic relationships.
Feature engineering is an art, and it requires domain expertise. You have to know what signals matter for your particular corpus and use case. That's one reason why neural re-rankers, particularly cross-encoders, have become so popular. They learn the relevant features automatically from the raw text. You don't have to tell the model that query term proximity matters. It figures that out from the training data.
What are the main neural approaches people are using right now?
The dominant approach for RAG pipelines is the cross-encoder based on a transformer architecture, typically a BERT variant. Models like Cohere's Rankway, which is their dedicated re-ranking AP. I, or the open-source BGE re-ranker from BAAAI, or Mixbread's MXBI re-rank models. These are all cross-encoders fine-tuned specifically for the re-ranking task. Cohere's documentation explains it well. Their rank model takes the query and a list of documents, concatenates the query with each document, and runs them through the transformer jointly. The model outputs a relevant score for each pair, and then you sort by score. What's interesting about Cohere's approach is that they've optimized the architecture so that the computational cost scales efficiently with the number of documents. Instead of running each query document pair completely independently, they share some computation across documents.
There's been a lot of movement in this space, even in the last year. The open source re-ranking models have gotten dramatically better.
They really have. BGE ReRanker V2 came out and was competitive with proprietary models. Then Mixbread released MXBI ReRank Base and large variants that pushed the state-of-the-art further. And just a few months ago, BAAI released BGE Ranker V2.5, which is a multilingual model that handles over 100 languages. The pace of improvement is rapid, and the gap between open source and proprietary re-rankers is narrowing fast.
One thing I've noticed when actually building these pipelines is that the re-ranker's performance is highly sensitive to the quality of the initial retrieval. If your first stage retriever is pulling in a lot of irrelevant documents, even the best re-ranker can't salvage the results completely. You're asking it to find a needle in a haystack, and if the haystack is mostly hay, the needle might be buried too deep.
That's a critical point, and it's why a lot of the practical engineering work goes into tuning that first stage. There's a concept called recall at K, which measures what percentage of the truly relevant documents made it into your top K retrieved candidates. If your recall at 100 is only 60%, meaning 40% of the relevant documents aren't even in the candidate set, then no re-ranker in the world can fix that. The re-ranker can only reorder what it's given. It can't retrieve documents that weren't included.
You need to make sure your initial retrieval is generous enough that the relevant stuff is in there somewhere. But if you make it too generous and pull in thousands of documents, you're increasing latency and you're making the re-ranker's job harder because it has to evaluate more candidates.
Right, and that's a classic engineering trade-off. In practice, people often use a two-stage retrieval before the re-ranker even enters the picture. You might start with a fast lexical search using BM25 to get an initial set, then use a bi-encoder to do a slightly more expensive semantic re-ranking of that set, and then finally apply the cross-encoder to the top results. Each stage gets more precise and more expensive, but operates on a smaller set of candidates.
That's essentially what Algolia does with their AI re-ranking product. They've got a multi-stage pipeline where the initial search uses their proprietary indexing, then they apply what they call adaptive re-ranking that learns from user behavior over time.
Yes. And Algolia's approach is interesting because it's designed for e-commerce and site search, where user behavior signals like clicks, conversions, and add-to-cart events are rich and abundant. In that context, re-ranking isn't just about semantic relevance, it's about business outcomes. You're re-ranking to maximize the probability that the user finds and purchases the product they're looking for. That's a different objective function than what you'd use for a RAG pipeline where you're trying to maximize factual accuracy and answer quality.
That distinction matters a lot. In e-commerce, if the re-ranker surfaces a popular but only tangentially related product, the user might still buy it, so the business metric looks good. In a RAG pipeline, if the re-ranker surfaces a tangentially related document and the LLM uses it to generate an answer, you might get a factually incorrect or misleading response. The cost of a false positive is much higher.
And this is where evaluation becomes really important. How do you know if your re-ranker is doing a good job? In traditional information retrieval, you use metrics like NDCG, which stands for Normalized Discounted Cumulative Gain. It measures how well your ranked list matches an ideal ranking, with a discount factor that penalizes relevant documents appearing lower in the list. For RAG specifically, people are increasingly using LLL, M as a judge evaluations, where you have a separate LLM evaluate whether the retrieved documents actually support a correct answer to the query.
The meta-evaluation layer. You're using AI to evaluate whether your AI retrieval pipeline is working.
It sounds circular, but it actually works surprisingly well in practice. And the alternative, human evaluation, doesn't scale. If you're building a search system over thousands or millions of queries, you can't have humans annotate every query document pair. So you use a strong LLM to do the initial evaluation and then spot check with humans to make sure the LLMM evaluator isn't drifting.
Let's get into something Daniel specifically mentioned, which is the challenge of tuning semantic search so it doesn't make incorrect connections between ideas. This is actually a deep problem with embeddings themselves. The embedding space is a compressed representation, and compression always loses information. Two documents might be close in embedding space for the wrong reasons.
This is sometimes called the semantic drift problem. Embeddings are trained on large corpora, and they learn statistical associations that don't always correspond to factual or logical relationships. A classic example is that in many embedding models, the vector for doctor is closer to the vector for man than to the vector for woman, not because of any real-world truth, but because of statistical patterns in the training data. When you're building a search system, those biases can surface as relevance errors. A search for medical professional might rank documents about male doctors higher than documents about female doctors, not because they're more relevant, but because of the embedding geometry.
Re-ranking can either amplify or correct for those biases, depending on how the re-ranker is trained. If your cross-encoder was trained on biased relevance judgments, it'll learn to reproduce those biases.
That's right. And this is one reason why the training data for re-ranking models matters so much. The major benchmark for re-ranking evaluation is something called MS Marco, which is a large-scale dataset of real Bing search queries with human relevance judgments. but MS Marco has its own biases. The relevance judgments were made by human annotators who had their own perspectives and blind spots. And the queries themselves reflect what people search for on Bing, which is not necessarily representative of all search behavior.
If you're building a specialized search system, like Daniel's episode search or a RAG pipeline over a specific domain, you might need to fine-tune your re-ranker on domain-specific relevance data. Generic re-rankers get you part of the way, but they don't understand the specific structure and terminology of your corpus.
That's the current frontier, actually. Domain adaptive re-ranking. There's a technique called distillation-based fine-tuning where you take a large, powerful re-ranker and use it to generate training data for a smaller, domain-specific model. You run the large model over your corpus and query set, collect its relevant scores, and then train a smaller model to mimic those scores. The smaller model is faster at inference time and can be deployed more cheaply, but it retains much of the quality.
This connects to something Daniel was getting at with his cloud code workflow. He's using search to figure out whether we've covered a topic before, and the quality of that search directly affects the quality of the episodes. If the search misses relevant past episodes, we might repeat ourselves. If it surfaces irrelevant episodes, he wastes time reading transcripts that don't help.
We have over 2,000 episodes, each with a full transcript. That's a substantial corpus. Searching it effectively requires exactly the kind of pipeline we're discussing. And Daniel's insight about switching from title and description search to full transcript search is exactly the kind of practical engineering decision that makes a real difference. Higher recall, but then you need better re-ranking to manage the increased noise.
Let's talk about one of the subtle challenges here, which is that relevance is contextual in ways that are hard to capture in a single query. When Daniel searches for, have we covered Edward Snowden before? The relevance of a given episode depends on what he's planning to do with that information. If he's looking for a full biography to avoid repeating it, an episode that mentions Snowden in passing is not relevant. But if he's looking for any mention to build a timeline of our coverage, that same passing mention is highly relevant. The re-ranker doesn't know the intent behind the query.
This is the query intent problem, and it's one of the hardest unsolved challenges in information retrieval. In traditional web search, intent is partially inferred from the query itself. A query like buy running shoes has clear commercial intent. A query like running shoe reviews has informational intent. But for the kind of searches Daniel is doing, the query text often doesn't contain enough signal to disambiguate intent. A query like Edward Snowden could mean, tell me who he is, or show me everything we've ever said about him, or find the episode where we discussed the Snowden interview in detail.
This is where the RAG context actually helps, because in a RAG pipeline, the query isn't just the user's search string, it's the user's full conversation with the LLM. The LLMM can reformulate the query based on the conversation context before sending it to the retriever. So if the user has been talking about biography episodes, the LLM might reformulate Edward Snowden to Edward Snowden biography episode full coverage.
Query reformulation is a huge lever, and it's one of the most underappreciated parts of building a good RAG system. You can have the best retrieval and re-ranking pipeline in the world, but if the query you're sending to it is poorly formulated, you'll get poor results. There's a whole subfield called query expansion where you take the user's original query and augment it with related terms, synonyms, or even generated hypothetical answers to improve retrieval.
That's the HiDE approach, right? Hypothetical document embeddings.
The idea is beautifully simple. Instead of embedding the user's query directly, you first ask an LLM to generate a hypothetical document that would answer the query. Then you embed that hypothetical document and use it as the search query. The intuition is that the hypothetical answer will be closer in embedding space to actual relevant documents than the original question would be. A question and an answer live in different regions of the embedding space, even when they're about the same topic. By converting the question into an answer-like form, you bridge that gap.
Which is clever, but it adds latency and cost. You're doing an extra LLM call before you even start the retrieval. For some applications, that's worth it. For others, the latency budget doesn't allow it.
And this gets back to the fundamental tension in all of this, which is that better results almost always require more computation. The art of building these systems is figuring out where to spend your computational budget for maximum impact. Re-ranking is one of the highest return investments you can make because you're applying expensive computation to a small, carefully selected set of candidates. It's leverage.
Let's talk about the actual implementation. If someone is setting up a RAG pipeline or a search system and they want to add re-ranking, what does that look like in practice?
The simplest approach, and the one I'd recommend for most people starting out, is to use a dedicated re-ranking API coheres. Re-rank is probably the most popular. You send it your query and a list of document texts, and it returns relevant scores. You sort by score and take the top results. It's a single API call. The pricing is per search, and for most use cases, it adds maybe 50 to 100 milliseconds of latency.
If you want to self-host,
then you're looking at running a model like BGE, ReRanker V2, or MXBuy, ReRank Base, on your own infrastructure. These models are typically a few hundred megabytes, so they fit on a single GPU or even a CPU, if you're willing to accept higher latency. The inference code is straightforward. You load the model, tokenize the query document pairs, run them through the model, and get logits that you convert to relevant scores. The engineering challenge is more about throughput than complexity. If you're re-ranking hundreds of queries per second, you need to batch efficiently and manage GPU memory.
You need to think about the re-ranking depth. How many candidates do you re-rank? If your initial retrieval returns 1,000 documents, do you re-rank all of them, or just the top 50?
The sweet spot depends on your recall curve. If your initial retriever has high recall at 50, meaning most of the relevant documents are in the top 50, then re-ranking more than 50 has diminishing returns. But if your recall at 50 is only 70%, you might need to re-rank the top 200 to make sure you're catching everything. There's no universal answer. You have to measure on your specific corpus and query distribution.
Which is, I think, the real takeaway from all of this. The principles are general, but the optimal configuration is always specific to your data, your queries, and your objectives. You can't just take someone else's pipeline and expect it to work optimally for your use case.
And it's why evaluation is not optional. You need a representative set of queries with known relevant documents, and you need to measure how changes to your pipeline affect retrieval quality. Without that feedback loop, you're tuning in the dark.
One thing I've seen people get wrong is treating re-ranking as a fix for a broken initial retrieval stage. If your first stage retriever is bad, adding a re-ranker is putting a bandage on a wound that needs stitches. The re-ranker can only polish the candidates it's given. If the truly relevant documents aren't in the candidate set, no amount of re-ranking will service them.
This is the recall ceiling problem. Your final precision is bounded by the recall of your initial retrieval. If your initial retrieval misses a relevant document, it's gone forever. So the first priority should always be making sure your initial retrieval is casting a wide enough net. Only then does re-ranking become valuable.
This loops back to Daniel's experience with the episode search. Switching from title and description to full transcript search was fundamentally about increasing the recall ceiling. The old approach was missing relevant episodes because the metadata didn't capture the content. The new approach captures everything, but then you need re-ranking to separate the episodes that are about the topic from the ones that merely mention it.
There's an interesting architectural question here about where to put the intelligence. Do you put it in the retrieval stage, making the embedding smarter and the initial search more precise? Or do you put it in the re-ranking stage, keeping the initial retrieval simple and fast but adding a sophisticated re-ranker? Or do you put it in the query reformulation stage, using an LLM to craft better queries before anything else happens?
The answer is probably all three, in different proportions depending on the use case. But I think the trend is toward pushing more intelligence into the query side. If you can formulate the query well, you don't need as much sophistication downstream. And LLMs are really good at query formulation, especially when they have access to conversation context.
There's a paper from earlier this year that showed something striking. They compared a simple BM25 retriever with LLM-based query reformulation against a sophisticated dense retriever with no query reformulation. The BM25 Plus reformulation system actually performed comparably on several benchmarks. The takeaway being that a good query can compensate for a simple retriever, but a bad query can undermine even the best retriever.
Which is humbling, because it means a lot of the fancy infrastructure we build might be compensating for the fact that we're not asking the right questions in the first place.
That's a very corn observation, and I think it's true. But it's also true that in many real-world applications, you don't control the query. Users type what they type. You can't always reformulate their queries behind the scenes. So you need the downstream infrastructure to handle the messiness.
So let's talk about where this is all heading. What's the next frontier for re-ranking?
I think there are two big trends. The first is multi-vector re-ranking, where instead of representing each document as a single vector, you represent it as multiple vectors, one per section or per semantic chunk, and the re-ranker can attend to specific parts of the document rather than treating it as a monolithic block. This is especially important for long documents where the relevant information might be buried in a single paragraph.
That makes sense. A cross-encoder that processes an entire 50-page document alongside the query is going to lose the signal in the noise. But if the document is chunked, and the re-ranker can score each chunk independently, you get much finer-grained relevance.
And the second trend is what I'd call intent-aware re-ranking, where the re-ranker doesn't just score relevance in the abstract, but scores relevance with respect to a specific user intent or task. This is where the re-ranker starts to look more like an agent. It's not just asking, is this document about the query topic, but rather, does this document help accomplish what the user is trying to do?
Which requires the system to have a model of user intent, which is a whole other can of worms. But I can see how it would be powerful. For Daniel's use case, an intent-aware re-ranker would know the difference between I'm researching a new episode topic and I'm checking if we've covered this exact angle before. Same query, different intent, different ranking.
That's where the line between search and reasoning starts to blur. At some point, the re-ranker isn't just re-ranking, it's understanding.
Which brings us back to the broader theme of a lot of Daniel's prompts. The tools are getting smarter, but they're also demanding more from us in terms of how we think about what we're building and why. You can't just throw a re-ranker at a search problem and call it done. You have to understand what you're optimizing for, how to measure it, and where the real bottlenecks are.
That, I think, is the practical wisdom here. Re-ranking is a powerful technique, but it's not magic. It's a specific tool for a specific job. Use it when you have a high recall initial retrieval and you need to improve precision. Don't use it as a substitute for getting the fundamentals right, and always, always measure.
Sound advice from the Walking Encyclopedia. I'm going to go take a nap now.
You've earned it. That was a lot of words for a sloth. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The national animal of Scotland is the unicorn. It has been since the 12th century.
That explains a lot about Scotland, actually.
I have no follow-up questions. I'm just going to sit with that. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumentop for keeping the show running. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps other people find the show. We're back next time with another prompt from Daniel.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.